Case number 3, October 29th, 1991, continuing from tape number 2's ID.
Oh, okay, so the mindset of being in proven, unproven, accurate or not accurate would be applied to the nature of the mental problem, recognizing it, and also to the potential solution of it. So one may see that it is proven that this is the nature of the problem, and one may believe that it is not proven. You will notice in characters, primary characters, who are fixed in terms of pursuing the problem, their description of the existence of it may be proven or unproven or accurate or not accurate. They'll move through that. They will not hold on as being just proven only, proven only, proven only, the problem exists, 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 as a primary character. And when we have selected the particular set that we have for of 16 elements for making into characters, it then gives us this other set as being floating, floating. One side note here that's important is that this is not the only set of characters we could choose. We're talking about a specific, simple film, a left-minded film that is done simply, usually an action-type film or a simple drama or comedy, and they will generally select this set of characters. But essentially, any set of these 16 elements, and there are four sets, could be made into a character set for different stories. And if you had a character set that was fixed in a mindset of looking at a character saying it was proven, then you would end up with a character who is always saying that the nature of the problem is proven or the existence of the problem is proven, and he would stay in his belief that it's proven all the way through, and at the end would then have the choice of remaining thinking that it's proven or switching over to saying that it is unproven and just simply admitting the possibility that he didn't understand the nature of the problem to begin with. That could be a character set. So that might come to mind when we're saying that this is floating and it's not fixed in this particular story, and you would wonder why I've seen characters that are fixed like that. Yes, with different character sets. But once we've established in this particular film the character set that we have with pursuit and support in that quad of 16 elements, then we have ended up, by our other choices in this particular film, in the typical simple story, we've ended up with a set that's floating, and that would be exposition, and that would have in it proven, unproven, accurate, and non-accurate. And so in terms of the mental problem itself, the primary character will move through all of those attitudes toward it during the course of the story. And because it's also floating and physical, the primary character would also move through all of those in terms of his approach to the physical problem. That's how you end up with some interesting dramatic tension between where he is in a given act in terms of the mental problem and where he is in a given act in terms of the physical problem, because he could be proven in one and unproven in the other, then be unproven in one and accurate in the other. You could end up with him apparently jumping all over the place as a human being, as a character in the story, because he's simply changing his opinion of the mental problem and changing his opinion of the physical problem in ways that don't follow one following the other. That's a good way to dole out information to an audience, too. That's why the audience quad is there, is you can start out by saying something is absolutely proven and end up by the end of the story saying that it is unproven. So that's the author's playground. The author cannot play in his own backyard where he's sitting there with his own set that he has fixed completely and said, these are my beliefs, these are my invariables, this is who I am as an author, and I say this is what is proper, moral, correct, or actual. And he locks that in. Then he takes his characters, and through his interactions in the plot area, he has his playground in the exposition area. And that's where the audience sits, is in the author's playground. Whoa, what a concept. Anyway, so other sets of elements, sets of four elements, would be ending, unending, expectation and determination, effect and cause, result and process, theory and hunch, test and trust. Just from the sound of the words, it becomes clear that one can use these and does use these quite frequently in the storytelling process. And the audience will sit there and use these tools as their method of evaluating what's going on in the story. Is this something that requires testing to prove, or is this something we will trust? Essentially, in trusting it, it is very much like suspension of disbelief. We simply say, yes, we'll buy that. You know, is it a theory? Do we think this is what's happening? And an author can play with what an audience thinks is happening. And they can manipulate it so an audience will be sitting there wondering if this is the case or not by trying to work out the bits and pieces. This will come up frequently in terms of a mystery or a murder mystery or a whodunit. In terms of hunch, that is opposite to theory in terms of its characteristic. And hunch would be, again, something that we would say, well, we think this is correct that the author is saying.
We feel it's correct.
We feel it's correct. Or we would look at the direction in which things are changing in the story, and we'd say, well, I bet you it's going to turn out to be this guy who did it or something. Not based on any specific chain of events, but just on the way things are heading. That is how an author can use red herrings and twists and turns in the road to keep the unraveling and the unveiling of the mindset and the physical set from being instantly determined, to keep it interesting. Because these same 64 elements of mindset, which are the same ones in physical set, are going to be in every single story. And within the limits of where you place your characters and where you place the author and where you place the interactions and where you place the exposition, where all those things are put, even though that gives some variety, and with the mixing and matching of characters, it still is something that without that floating set becomes very predictable because you've seen it so many times before. But when you can make a structure look one way, legitimately, and then change it to look another way by moving through this exposition set, then you have a much more interesting task for the audience in trying to determine what is reality and what is perception, what is the actuality of the story, and they will not know for sure until the last moment when the last pieces come into place in that floating set and everything becomes fixed for the final view of the nature of the dilemma by having the fixed mindset, and then the physical set floats into the fixed set, and you end up with everything locked in a potential. And then they understand, as the author did, the nature of the problem. That covers basically the identification of the 64 elements and how they're broken into four different quads from the perspective of a single type of film that we've been talking about. But rather than just showing a lot of different types of films so that we could see how these arrangements are altered, there are other levels that we wish to explore first, remaining consistent with this particular perspective. When we're dealing with our fixed and our floating sets, when we're dealing with our universe and our mind, we really have two perspectives to look at things from. We can look from the frozen mindset and watch the universe change, or look from a frozen universe set and watch the mind change. Either perspective is valid, and either perspective will exist in terms of a story. They will both coexist. Who will be looking at what, at which point, is largely determined by one's own personal bias of being left-minded or right-minded. But when you take a mindset and fix it and create a floating universe set, in a respect you have fixed a universe set and let a mindset float because one has determined the other. When we take our elements, our 64 elements, and we divide them into four quads of 16, each quad of 16 that we have essentially represents something in the universe or something in the mind. Now, we cannot see the universe from the perspective of the universe because we can only see things from the perspective of our mind. So when we are looking from the universe at the mind, we can't really be sitting in the universe. Essentially, it's like sitting in our minds looking at someone else's mind. So the terms that we come up with to group some of these elements into little quads of four, the terms that let us say, well, these four things describe this, or these four things are created by this. When we're looking from the universe, we are looking at others, essentially. We're saying, let's see what other people's minds look like. And we can see that someone might, for example, have strategy or take actions or have an analysis or make a decision. And that would be an area that we would apply to other people. Oh, that's what his strategy is. This is what his actions are. This is how he's analyzing, or the analysis he has made. And this is how he's deciding, or the decision that he is needing to make. Now, from our perspective, we would see that that decision has been made because we've already made up our mind on the subject, perhaps. But we would see this person as deciding, in the process of deciding, or having made a decision. If we look at that same set of things from the perspective of our own minds looking out at the universe, instead of seeing a strategy as to what is going to be done, we would look at it in terms of what we can do. We would simply say that this is what we can do about that problem. Being able to do something, that we can do it, taking everything else into consideration, not just that we physically have the ability or the mental potential to, but that other things that get in our way, obstacles that get in our way, we've incorporated into that and said, well, this is what we can do. If we look at that, then that's the same thing as developing a strategy, essentially, just from a different perspective, because it's limited out what we are not going to attempt, what we are not considering as a potential road to take. We are saying, this is the road we can take. That, therefore, is our strategy. If we look at our needs and say, this is what is needed, that, in a sense, determines our actions. We say that this is what is needed. We're saying, this must be done. This is what's required for something we've committed ourselves to, or something that is essential to our own lives. If we've determined that our lives are valuable to us, well, then we darn well need this. Somebody else may determine that their lives are not valuable, and therefore they don't need it, or that that's not something that is important to their lives. It does not become a need. But if we have a need, that then determines what our actions must be. And to an extent, we could look from the perspective of actions and say that by these actions, we could perhaps see that they came from a particular need and work our way back. But the motivational side, the side coming from these blue cards on our chart of can, need, want, and should, those motivations are clear from us internally. We see in others the external manifestation of those in terms of strategy, actions, analysis, and decision. We have then four blues and four yellows for each one of the quads of 16 whites. And in essence, under normal circumstances, when we are not dealing with a dilemma, each set of each yellow term has a corresponding white term, and a corresponding blue term, sorry, and they are locked into a set of four whites. So that strategy will always be seen in terms of actuality, probability, possibility, and potentiality, which are also the things that are tied in with can, the actuality, the probability, the possibility, and the potentiality. When we are looking at something that we want or are deciding on, deciding being decision being the yellow card and want being the blue card, we would look in terms of acceptance, non-acceptance, evaluation, or reevaluation. Essentially, that is a way of determining if we are going to be content with something by accepting it. If we will not accept it and feel that something else is necessary, that this is not the scenario internally or externally that we desire, or if we, I'm sorry, what?
Or we want.
Want is determined by if it's a scenario we desire.
Okay.
Right. So, anyway, once we determine, though, those aspects, then we essentially have a decision about how we're going to approach it, if we are going to accept it, if we are going to not accept it. And our wants determine whether we will accept or not accept, and our decision is to accept or not accept. Again, acceptance, non-acceptance, evaluation, reevaluation are the four wide elements that are tied in intrinsically to decision and want. So as long as we're keeping our yellows and our blues together, we have a universe set, a yellow set, that matches our mindset, our blue set, and we can evaluate problems and act upon them without difficulty. When we get into a dilemma, we are essentially moving the yellows and the blues in relationship to each other. When we do this, that's when we need to take a complete set of 64 white elements for the blues and a complete set of 64 white elements for the yellows. Because when we move a yellow in relationship to a blue, if we look at it from the blue perspective and say blues are fixed or mindset is fixed, then we're going to look at things in terms of the whites that pertain to the mindset. And we'll look at those yellows as now being applied to whites that are not where they are intrinsically located. Suddenly we will have moved strategy, for example, from being in the quad where can is. Perhaps we've moved it over in terms of where we have commitment, which is pursuit, avoidance, oppose, and support. Instead of that being considered our self-interest in yellows, we now are looking at that as our strategy. Our strategy is to pursue. Our strategy is to support, oppose, or avoid. It still makes a certain amount of sense because of our floating perspective inside. We can look at others. We can look at ourself. We can look at the universe outside. And depending on how we look at things, we can see that there is a touch point between strategy and pursue, support, oppose, and avoid. But those are not the things that determine strategy, and they are not the direct manifestations of strategy. They are just simply akin to the elements that created strategy. Here's a reason why that occurs. We look in the mind in terms of saying that there is thought or knowledge or ability or a desire. We look at those as the basic elements that make up our thinking processes. And each of the sets of 16 quads, 16 elements that we have, each of those master quads, is going to be representative of a mindset of thought, a mindset of ability, a mindset of desire, and a mindset of knowledge. So when we take a quad of 16 elements and we say there are now four quads of four elements in it, we apply our minds to that as well. When we say, let us look at our abilities, well, then we look at our abilities in terms of thought, knowledge, ability, and desire. So we're applying all of those to an evaluation of our own abilities. In doing that, we have now established a quad that contains a knowledge perspective to it. We do this for looking at our thoughts. We do it for looking at our desires and looking at our own knowledge. Essentially, when we become self-aware, when we are looking at our own mental processes, we turn those mental processes on themselves and one by one look at the different mental processes we have in terms of all four. Therefore, can and strategy being tied in with actuality, probability, possibility, and potentiality forms the knowledge quad when we're looking at thought. When we look at desire, commitment, and self-interest, with pursuit, avoidance, support, and oppose as being the elements between them, that forms the knowledge quad for the desire master quad. That's why we see a similarity in terms between can and commitment, between strategy and self-interest, between strategy being applied to the elements of pursue, support, avoid, and oppose, is because we are looking at them both from a knowledge perspective. But one is, in reality, thought seen from knowledge, and the other is desire seen from knowledge. When we see them from knowledge and figure because we're looking at them from knowledge, they are interchangeable, that's when we get into trouble. That's when we're building a balanced inequity. That's when we're shifting an inequity from one set of 16 to another and moving it down. We have talked about thought, knowledge, ability, and desire in terms of our pink cards. But again, those are seen from another view, the external view, being memory, preconscious, conscious, and subconscious. We see those things as, when looking at ability, we look at it as preconscious. That's one of the more difficult ones to look at. But ability is a rating of how we line up in relationship with the universe, how it is matching us. And since we know from our earlier discussion that the preconscious is a filtered unit whereby the actual observation coming in from the environment is filtered by the subconscious to create the preconscious, then in that case, that is a rating of how we compare to the universe, and it is a rating of ability from another perspective. When we look at thought and say that that in terms of pink is thought, but in terms of our external view is conscious, we look at someone else and we see their conscious mind at work. We look within ourselves and see our thoughts. Essentially, it is the same area. It is where the potentials and energies of mixing and matching between what we are and the signals we're getting from the universe are compared, and what to do about it is determined. And so that is our conscious mind and it is our thoughts. We look at knowledge and we say knowledge seen from the inside, that this is what we know. From the outside, it is seen as memory. And there we can see the differential between having fallible and infallible knowledge. Why, knowledge in and of itself, although it is what we hold to be true, can never be completely trusted because, in essence, from the outside, it's only memory. Memory is just the conglomeration of all the information that we have refined into saying this is most likely. And when we hold something as being a pattern of elements or a series of interrelationships that we look at, freeze and say this is what we understand, this is what we remember from all the things that we have seen in the past, condensed, congealed, and refined, we end up with what we hold to be knowledge. And finally, moving on to the desire quad, we look at that from the outside as subconscious, where our motivations of the directions we want to move and what we're trying to accomplish come from. Again, desire need not be acted upon, and the motivations from the subconscious need not be acted upon. But they provide us with our basic bias. It gives us directionality and it gives us motive force in our lives, in our minds. And that is what makes us not put up with everything the universe has in store for us. It's what gives us a fixed set that is more difficult to change. So now when we begin to move these sets of yellows in reference to blues, we're mixing up memory with subconscious, changing their positions in terms of knowledge and thought. We're shifting things around, and they're getting improperly read, improperly interrelated to come to accurate conclusions. Again, the purpose of this is to hide an inequity. The whole functionality of this is to stick something so far back in our minds that it ends up in the subconscious, in the desire area, filters the preconscious so we no longer see that inequity from our conscious standpoint and we'll no longer have to consider it. This is in the hopes that either our minds will change or the universe will change eventually and allow the dilemma to resolve itself without having to make a choice that gives up one thing in favor of another. Or if we are unable to change our minds and we are unable to change the universe, rather than cluttering our thinking with reconsideration of this until new information has come in that allows us to make one of those things change, a new technique we discover to manipulating the universe, or a new attitude that we have developed within ourselves to manipulating our mind. Until that happens, let's clear the mind and concentrate on problems we can do something about and let that one rest for a while so we counterbalance ourselves.
Okay, this is going to be a rough description of how justification works, the process of justification. Oh gosh, I know I've written this down too. The way justification works, and the whole reason justification exists, is it allows the mind to deal with problems later. In other words, if there is a current inequity, inequity that is measured right now, quite frequently those inequities will disappear over time, either because the universe has changed or because the mind has changed. But the mind cannot just let it stand. What it must do, as we had discussed earlier, is balance the inequity. The way that it does that is through the process of justification. When a person is thinking, they're using their thoughts and their knowledge and their determinations of their ability and desire to evaluate how they are in the universe. Knowledge and thought are current state. Ability and desire are the current state through time, so therefore, depending on which way you're looking at, they can be indicative of where things are going, or, when looking backwards, how they have been compared to where they are now. One can see a discrepancy between either desire and ability, meaning the direction of one's desires versus the direction of one's abilities, and one can see them between one's knowledge and one's desires, or one's thoughts and one's abilities, the direction of one's thoughts versus one's actual abilities, or the directions of one's abilities. When there is a discrepancy between it, when there is an inequity, the mind will go about trying to find out where the inequity is, because that is the first determination that must be made. Exactly what point, either internally or externally, and if it's internally, where internally does the inequity reside, or what does it reside between? What it will do, because it cannot deal with it in its raw state, in other words, if there is a discrepancy between one's desires and one's abilities, you cannot really examine them per se. So what happens is you take the one step up, we call it, or up the justification tree, you take one level up, meaning I cannot solve it here, let me look at this in a different fashion. Now, by the very nature of doing that, it's an essential point, because it's something we have to do, because we cannot examine it in and of itself. We can make a decision at that point, but it doesn't make sense because we have other tools by which we can measure where the inequity resides. So we make the first step up, and the first step is basically saying, I cannot resolve the problem here, let me go someplace else to see where that inequity lies. So the next step up is into can, need, want, and should. Now, can, need, want, and should are one level removed from thought, knowledge, ability, and desire. What that means is that can is actually combined from everything except knowledge. So can is a determination based on desire, thought, and ability, not ability alone. The one thing it does not have is it does not have knowledge. Only after something has been proven or done or experienced can it then become part of wisdom. Can it then become part of ability or part of knowledge? Until that point, can is used as if it was knowledge, so that if someone says, I can do it, well, the knowledge is not there because it is not, it has not already happened. But everything else seems to point to the fact that can is indeed there. Now, that one has the ability without the experience. Now, when looking at need or should or want, each of them are made up of three of the four on the previous level. Need is made up of knowledge, desire, and thought, but lacks ability. Want is made up of ability,